Okay, let's get this meeting going. Is there the recording started for the call?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thanks. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Work Party 1 meeting number 30 for the Cross-Community Working Group on Enhancing ICANN Accountability. It's 18 hours UTC on Monday, the 2nd of November, 2015. My name is Jordan Carter, for the record, the rapporteur for the work party representing the CCNSO in this group. We've got an agenda in front of us on the screen. The agenda was circulated around about 12 hours ago, so it was a little bit later than that. As we know, those of us who are on our last call, the purpose of this is to close out this decision or to advise the CCWG we were unable to and leave the decision to them. And that's what the agenda is about. The large agenda item is on community decision-making. And then I just want to raise an issue with the resolution and dialogue step. For consideration of the group. If Jonathan Zuck is on the call, we'll have an update from him on the budget power. And hopefully we can get a staff update about what we need to do as a work party. I've got two questions. Someone here has got their microphone not on mute. That's why my voice is echoing, and that's why we can hear someone typing. So please put your microphone on mute. And if you don't, we'll have to ask the staff to mute every other participant. That sounds like it's done. Thank you. So without the echo, community decision-making is the main item. And I'll just reinforce that comment. This is our last chance as a group to make a call on this to see if we've got a recommendation for the CCWG. If we can't do that, the CCWG will make the decisions in our absence, if you like. So that is just something to bear in mind. And in prepping that second agenda item, what I tried to do was to give some statements that would give us something to agree with or disagree with. And I suspect that a few people are going to be doing each of those things, but it was just to help the decision-making. I, like everyone else, I think recognize this is a complex area, that we're going to end up in a situation where some people are going to be unhappy whichever way we go, and that's just part of the consensus building process towards a third draft of the proposal. So the first item I'd ask for is the agenda review. Are there any other items that need to be dealt with on this call that anyone is aware of and that they want to raise now?
Jordan, in the chat, a couple of us have mentioned this notion of some elements of transparency in Work Stream 1 and asking whether that's part of Work Party 1.
Steve, that's a good question. And it's a question to which I don't, off the top of my head, know the answer. My impression was that it was part of the review and redress process. But that because it was in Work Stream 2 to be done after the transition, that as a subject it hadn't been allocated between the work parties. And so I don't know any more clearly than that. I do know, however, that one of our co-chairs, Thomas, is hoping to join us shortly, and he might have the answer to that question, or ICANN staff on the call might know the answer to that question. So,
Jordan, it's Steve, just one more time. If there's any confusion about Work Party 1 or 2 at this late date, let's just err on the side of broader group and run it to the whole CCWG like it has been. I think that's the way the thread is gone for the last 3 or 4 days, so we probably ought to just leave it on the full CCWG.
This is Thomas. I'm sorry, I'm not in the AC room, but since you've asked for the co-chair to chime in, Becky is working on the transparency question, so that's in capable hands, and we will bring it back in front of the whole CCWG tomorrow.
Great. Okay, thank you, Thomas, for that answer. Are there any other sort of agenda items to raise? Otherwise, we'll just head into the substantive discussion around decision making. And if you think of something during the call that needs to be dealt with in Party 1, you can raise it in any other business. So you haven't lost your opportunity to do it. If we move on to Agenda Item 2, then, community decision-making. As you know, we all did a discussion of this quite extensively on our last call, and a couple more papers were generated from that. One of them was the updated paper from Steve, which I slightly amended to try and take account of the comment that Caboose has made in the chat, consensus support and consensus objection. I don't think I quite managed to get his point into account, which I think is that each SO and AC is operating by consensus according to their usual rules in deciding what their stance is. But I did try and get into account that it's a consensus call, if you like, rather than a voting mechanism. So I slightly tweaked the language in Steve's paper before circulating it. We had Robin's paper that I circulated, which proposed some different voting weights between the SOs and ACs. As I understand it, the same voting weights that are present in the direct SOAC appointees to the ICANN board. And we had some charts from Greg Chatan that were circulated as well. and so the way I've structured the agenda, I think, is to do the hardest bits first. And so the split decisions within SOs and ACs is the first comment. If I could just precede that discussion, in our previous report, we did allow for a voting system which did allow SOs and ACs to sub-delegate their decision-making within their diverse bodies. This was mainly, I think, an effort to provide some diversity for the GNSO. Since the other SOs and ACs haven't expressed any kind of huge support for that. With the shift to a consensus model, it isn't clear how substantive this difference is in my mind, and the reason for that is simply that if we're having a system which registers objections and affirmations of support, the effect in the GNSO of this kind of diversity would be none. It would have no effect on the decision making of the community mechanism whatsoever. The only effect it could have would be in preventing the thresholds to argue in favor of a power being reached. And potentially, if the GNSO was opposed to a power and was the only group opposed, if some part of the GNSO in such a scenario didn't oppose the use of that power, it would fail to reach the objection. So I don't think anyone's proposing that the objection of a GNSO SG, for example, should carry the same weight as an entire other SO. So we've canvassed the arguments quite extensively about this either way, and there's been some good email traffic on it. There have been some comments in the chat about it, and that's the point. I think, Caboose, since what you're saying in the chat is still not clear to me and probably isn't clear to other people, I think you need to take a call, and your hand is up, so please take the floor.
Remove any difficulty of NTIA or part of the GAC or some other AC that remains advisory. We would like, whenever we talk of support, talking consensus support, talking of objection, consensus objection, that we remain to act with consensus, even if we are covered under the chapeau of consensus. This is one point. The second point is that splitting of the vote, I wish to suggest that you put it as optional. If an AEC or SO wants to take that, they can take that internally. So we take this last column as an optional for the time being, because it may not be wished by everybody, but if anyone wants to go to further detail, ramification and information, they can go that side. So I suggest that, if possible, take the last column as optional. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. Taking your 2 points in the reverse order, it's always been proposed that this would be an optional decision for each SO and AC. They could either choose to distribute their decisions among their subunits or not. But that doesn't change the issue of the kind of calculus of influence. So I think that's an important point to remember. On your first point, in terms of the description of consensus objection or consensus support, I'm assuming that you mean within each SO and AC. Can I just clarify with you, Cavus, that that's right? Are you meaning within the decisions of each SO and AC, consensus support or objection?
Yes. Sorry, to give this example, this is the area that I'm working. In GAC, we want to participate. We discuss, and by consensus, we provide our support. We discuss, mm-hmm. and by consensus, we provide our objections. But all of those is based on consensus. So that is, we remain an advisory body, and we call them consensus advice. So all of them remain advice. I want to facilitate not any objections from NTIA or others that saying that you give the government the power of voting. So the government will not be any additional power. The government will be maintained to have the advisory capacity in the sort of consensus. Whatever language you want to put it on that. This is just to facilitate these actions. And since I have the microphone, I would like to ask you, when you talk about support or objection, what about if there is abstention? Some people, they believe abstention would be objections. I don't believe so. Abstention has no weighting. It's abstention. You could not say it is an objection. So perhaps you may also clarify. I had this discussion seriously, at least with two people. They said that abstention means objection. That means consensus have not been reached. Whereas somebody would not like to participate in any discussion, so he remains abstention and his vote will not be counted in support or against. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Cavus. That's very helpful on both counts. From my reading in the consensus process, if someone is abstaining, if they're not offering a view, that isn't a vote against. It isn't an objection. It's simply a decision not to participate. So I think we have to be very clear in the report that in this system, this Dublin approach, a non-expression of a view simply doesn't count. It doesn't count as support. It doesn't count as an objection. And that's a way for an SO and AC to legitimately choose not to participate. Whoever is typing loudly, please mute your microphone. Thanks. On your the other point that you raised, Cavus, I think it's very helpful to tease that example out, because one thing is the language and the other thing is the substance. We can describe the language clearly the way that you've explained it, and that's helpful. I've now got a better understanding. But the decisional question is whether the view of the GAC or any other group, by consensus or otherwise, counts and these totaling up of the level of objection and support in order to make a decision about exercising a community power. And that's our next agenda item. That's point 2B on participating SOs and ACs, where my proposal has been that the GAC is included for that purpose. But let's hold that discussion to 2B, and let's continue on 2A. I see that there is a speaking list there, and so I would ask Tijani to please take the floor and give us his views on this question on the split decisions of NSOs or ACs, yes or no.
Thank you very much, Jordan. Do you hear me?
I do, quite gently.
Since we had a consensus last time that it will be more a consensus decision rather than a voting decision, I don't see how you can split the decision inside an SO or ACs. Shall it be a half objection or half support? I don't think it is possible. So I think that each SO and AC should give one position, which will be support or objection.
Okay. Thank you, Tijani. Next on the speaking list is Robin Gross.
Hi, can you hear me? This is Robin.
I can, yep.
Okay, great. So I want to speak against the move to prohibit split decisions within the SOs and the ACs. Our first draft proposal, our second draft proposal, went out very explicitly as saying we were permitting split decisions as a means of including diversity of viewpoints and a broad range of viewpoints in the overall community-wide decision. We didn't receive any public comment mandate that needed to be changed in any way. We had the call on Friday about, we discussed this issue. There was only one voice arguing against allowing the splits. We did a call of the checks and the crosses at that time, and it was about 8-2 against prohibiting the splits. So I'm wondering why we're even still talking about this like this is a serious proposal. This is something that has just come up at the last minute. It's a significant change in the overall structure that would cause serious concern, particularly within the GNSO, where we are as diverse of a group as there can be and are designed to be such. There's significant concern of how that will impact the ability of the GNSO to be effective. So this is a very big change that's being proposed at the last minute, and I'm very strongly against it. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. I just want to make a point about the process in response to your comment. At each face-to-face meeting of the CCWG, there's been the possibility to evolve and shift our model, and we've done that a number of times. So I don't know whether your comment was meant to be an attack on the legitimacy of the process in a group considering this kind of change, but I would just like to say that my perspective is that it is a legitimate thing for the CCWG as a whole to do, and that if it chooses to do it, it has to have a good explanation as to why it's made that change, especially when we are coming down to the wire in terms of timing and when we want the SOs and ACs to approve the proposal. And I do recognize your point that this is, in terms of split votes, this is a shift from what was presented in the second draft proposal. And what we need to try and measure in this work party is our level of consensus in favor of making that shift or not, or at least if there's not a level of consensus, then our level of views either way. Because that's important information for the CCWG as a whole, some of whom don't follow this as closely as we all do and will be keen on our advice as a group. So we aren't the decision-making forum, in other words. Susanna, your hand is up. Is it a fresh hand, or is it a the same hand?
It's an old hand. Sorry.
Okay, that's all right. So, in the chat, there are a few comments. Christopher Spain is saying that he's not a supporter of splitting votes. In this system, Kavusa Araste is saying he's not comfortable with the split. Jorge Cancio is saying that he's not comfortable with the split. Arti Bhavana asks a question. Question, the split vote only comes into question at the last stage of the escalation process, right? Arti, thank you for the question. I can answer that for you. Yes, this is only the decision-making process in the escalation. And so it's where the decision is made or not made to exercise the community power. That's where these consensus calls and levels of support are being exercised. At the moment, based on the chat, I would have to say that there's support for my statement, my recommendation statement, which is that each SOAC should come to the decision by means of its own processes, and that split decisions or delegating decisions to subunits will not be available. But I'm just saying what I'm seeing. We'll carry on with the speaking list. Chris, your hand is up. Please go ahead. And Chris, if you are speaking, you're unfortunately on mute.
Can you hear me, Jordan?
Oh, now we can, yep.
Oh, you can, excellent, good. I was just asking you a question for clarity. Are you saying that if we did have a split allowed, split votes allowed, it would only be allowed at the very end? So in other words, you couldn't split vote to commence the process or split vote to get support for community forum. Are you saying that the split, if we accepted it, would only be at the very end?
I'm sorry, Chris. You've picked up a mistake in my words, and you're right in the implicit point in your question, and I'm wrong. I think that the splitting exercise would work at each of those three decisional phases, whether to have a call to discuss the use of the power, whether to call the community forum, and whether to decide to use the power or not. So that it would be
that's
consistent
what I thought. I just
wanted all the way through.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for picking it up. It's early in the morning here. Sure it isn't in Australia. Avery, your hand is up, and then I'll try and answer Arti's second question. Avery, please go ahead.
This is Avery speaking from Japan in the middle of the night.
Can't hear you, Avery. Really, really quiet. Could you maybe speak into the mic a little?
No room and trying not to speak too loud. Because it's Japan in the middle of the night. I guess I'm getting confused on whether we've moved away from the consensus basis to a voting basis. And in a consensus basis, I thought that the community powers were being expressed when there was a consensus of the community to express them. And thus the whole notion of A, it being a voting process, and B, having a notion of splitting votes just doesn't make sense to me within that consensus process. So I understand Robin's call for, you know, more representative voting, but if it's a consensus process, the notion that we would have votes and split them, I don't understand it. So please, have we moved to a voting system again? Thank you.
Avery, it's Jordan here. My interpretation of where the group is at based on the discussions in both calls is that we are not, we've moved from the voting system in the second draft report to a consensus system. And what I'm seeing is a weight of opinion in favor of the statement that I put in the agenda, which is that there isn't any splitting of that consensus. You have to have some way to judge the consensus being strong enough to exercise the power, and that's what the decisional table that we'll look at in item 2D deals with. But no, we're not moving back based on what I'm seeing in the chat and what I've heard people talking about here. Thanks, Aubrey. Chris, is that a new hand or is that your previous hand? It's his previous hand. Okay. RT Bhavani, you asked another question in the chat. You said, so what happens when a constituency within an SOAC wants to propose the exercise of community power, but there isn't consensus within that SOAC for the forum or the call? I think you've got the answer to that. You are not in favor of, sorry, I think you got the answer to that, which is that if there isn't consensus within the SOAC, then the call isn't effective. And that doesn't mean that people can't ask other SOs and ACs to do it, and it doesn't mean they can't argue publicly in all of the ICANN forums in favor of the process or power to be exercised. It just means that the process isn't efficiently triggered. So when I look through the chat and the list, my take is sort of counting this is that there are three or four people who are arguing in favor of the split and a significantly larger number who are not. So I'm going to say that the Working Party One does recommend to the CCWG that each SOAC should come to a decision by means of its own processes and that split decisions or delegating decisions to subunits will not be available. Now, that would be a statement that stands on its own. After this call, wherever we land, I'll communicate those decisions in an email to the CCWG. That'll be the decisional point in all of this stuff that I haven't discussed. And Brett, in response to your question in the call, so SOs and ACs is prohibited from splitting. If they are divided, it forces them to abstain. The answer to that is if they don't meet their own internal processes to express a view, then they can't express a view. And as previously discussed on this call, yes, if an SOAC doesn't express a view, then the effect it would have in this system is a kind of abstention effect. Steve Del Bianco, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Jordan, Steve Del Bianco with the CSG. I wanted to note that if a split vote on the final stage of whether to exercise a power is not permitted, that the parts of an AC or SO are free to participate throughout the decision escalation process. In other words, let's say the business constituency, which is a group that I'm part of, it could participate at trying to provoke a petition to have a conference call. It could do all of the arguments on the conference call to convince other ACs and SOs to call for a community forum. The VC could be there to make the case for the community forum. It is on every email list and has the ability to rebut or object along the way. It would also, at the same time, be trying to work within the GNSO, where the VC lives, to try to move a resolution through the BC to support the exercise of the community power. So all of the stakeholder groups and constituencies that live below the ACSO level are welcome and visible participants in the whole decision process, as well as trying to move towards a decision in their ACSO. There might be barriers to their participation if there's a face-to-face community forum and the GNSO just sends one person. So I do think we want to look at a way to remedy that so that stakeholder groups get support to participate in a face-to-face community forum. And all of this would be present whether or not there is split voting at the last stage. So I would just ask us to note that whichever way we decide to go on this so that it's clear that stakeholder groups are part of the decision process all the way along. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. That's a helpful clarification and a really important point, even more important now than it was when we were contemplating a voting system as before. Jorge, your hand is up. Please take the floor. And Jorge, you're currently muted, so if you're speaking, we couldn't hear you.
Hello, do you hear me?
Yep.
Jordan?
Yes, we can hear.
Sorry, I had some trouble with a computer. Okay, thank you. I think what Steve just mentioned is a very important point. And it means, or at least I feel I understand that the escalation process especially with the community forum and all the other open and inclusive steps provide for a possibility for parts of the community, even if they don't amount to an entire SO or AC, to participate along the whole process of consensus building. So that's very important. And I think we've always talked about a very open process, open to every interested party. So I would understand that constituencies or parts of SOs and ACs could participate in that dialogue and deliberation. And the other point I would like to make is that every SO and AC is free to decide how they come up with a decision. If they set up very high thresholds for internal consensus, they can make sure that any minority which is relevant must be really taken on board when they take a decision. So it's not really a binary choice between having minorities are not only respected if they have a split vote at the end of the process. That's not the only way to include minorities. And that way of including minorities, I have made the point on email and also on the chat, is really a problem. And so if we have alternatives to integrate and to include minorities, which is, for instance, this open escalation process, as Steve pointed out, or the setting of very high consensus thresholds within the SOs and ACs, we can really integrate those minorities without giving up on the consensus-building mechanism we agreed upon in Dublin. Thank you.
Thank you, Jorge. The next speaker is Thomas Rickert, who is on the voice, but not on the Adobe room. He Skyped me to ask for a call. Thomas, please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Jordan. And a lot of what I wanted to say has already been said. But just to reemphasize that it is perfectly possible for every SO and AC to determine their processes on how they come to a support or objection position. And it would be perfectly possible for the GNSO, for example, to use another methodology than the stakeholder group / bicameral system for coming to a decision on the community powers. So the GNSO, as one of the affected parties, requesting split votes could address this issue by finding a special approach to making its decisions, its internal decisions on the community process, community powers. Having said that, I wanted to get back to points that were made by Robin earlier. Robin, you quoted or you made reference to the public comment, and you also made reference to the straw poll that was conducted during the last call. And I would just like to note that, if memory doesn't fail me, most of those in favor of split votes were from the GNSO, in fact. And while it is true that no specific or few specific public comments were made on the split vote, we had overwhelming support for moving away from voting to a consensus-based model. And the more fragmentation we allow to dilute the consensus-based approach, the less support we will get from the community on what we now call a consensus-based model. So I think that's an important factor to bear in mind, that we should truly keep this a consensus-based approach, because I think the community has strongly asked for that, and also to make sure that we don't have votes where individual interests can potentially overrule the community's wishes. Having said that, let me conclude by saying that I think the procedural aspect in the escalation process that Steve alluded to is a very important one. It's important for all groups, including subgroups, to make themselves heard during the escalation. This is why we're bringing all these discussions out to the whole community. And I think that might have more impact even than split votes within the different silos, if I might call them so, because then the arguments will be put out for everyone to take into account when the different groups come up with their consensus positions. So I think I should pause here. Thanks so much for allowing me into the queue, John. Back over to you.
Thanks, Thomas. Okay, it's been a reasonably fulsome discussion. I'm sticking with my view about what the views are on the call in regards to the recommendation here on split decision making. So I'm going to move us on to the next agenda item. The next agenda item is regarding the participating SOs and ACs, and I just want to start that item by being very clear that, as has been discussed already, as Thomas just mentioned, as Steve and others have mentioned, the participation of all SOs and ACs through the escalation process in terms of discussion, debate, advice, adding perspectives, and so on, is absolutely assured and guaranteed. That's an innovation that we came up with, I think, in the Paris meeting, maybe even in the Buenos Aires discussions. So the community forum will have everyone in it. The chances will be there for every group in the ICANN community and every individual, if they choose to express their views on the exercises of these community powers. But when it comes to the decisions that need to be made, the decisional points about whether to have a call, whether to have a community forum, and whether to exercise a community power or not, you need to know whose expressions of consensus, support and favor, or of objection against are totaled up, if you like, are weighed in making the final call and establishing what the degree of community consensus is. And we started off our model in the second draft proposal by saying that the seven SOs and ACs would be participative. And in both of our models, particularly in our second draft proposal, we said that there would be an equality of voice in making these decisions between the three SOs, ALAC and GAC, and a lesser representation for the root server folks and the SDAC. Now, in terms of participation, and we'll do the distribution of that decisional influence later. In terms of that decisional participation, ESSAC has said that they're not interested. They said they want to offer advice only. They don't want to have a role in decision making. They have been as clear as they could be about that, and they've been consistent with it as well. In terms of the root server, people, I made a request on list about that. Suzanne Wolf, who's the liaison from that community to the ICANN board, agreed to forward a query about it. And I can't recall public comments on that question. But the logic of ISAC not participating in decisions is, I think, quite similar to ESSAC. And so the recommendation that I'm putting to the group is that we recommend to the CCWG that decision rights for the exercise of community powers be granted to the GNSO, CCNSO, ASO, ALAC, and GAC. ESSAC and ISAC will be able to advise the other SOs and ACs through the community forum. Each SO or AC has the right to participate or not participate in any decision, with their choice not affecting the thresholds established for the exercise of community powers. So that's we need to test whether that is the advice we want to give the CCWG. It's essentially saying that the two smaller advisory committees are not part of the decisional process, but that the five, three SOs, the ALAC and the GAC, are. And I seek comments or a speaking list on that recommendation. Are there any comments to add or comments to make here? Robin, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Robin. Can you hear me?
Sure can. Yep.
So I would propose that what we have are those SOs and ACs that have decision-making authority in this to be the ASO, the CCNSO, the GNSO, and ALAC. I don't think the other ACs should be part of the decision-making authority. I think they should remain in as they currently are in an advisory status. They don't have the mandate to be making some of these kinds of decisions. Several of them have said they don't want this kind of responsibility, that it could be dangerous to put them in this kind of a position. And so I think we need to recognize that the different roles and responsibilities that were assigned to the SOs and ACs when they were first created actually is important today still. And we can't just paint with sort of a blanket broad brush. I think that would do away with a lot of the purposes and the intentions that were originally set up with these different groups. So I don't think we should be giving the GAC a voting, a weight in this. I think that we've heard from the board, we've heard from the NTIA that any change that provides GAC with decisional weight is a change in the corporate structure that it would object to. I think we should take that very seriously. I think we should also look at the existing board in terms of who has voting members on the ICANN board, and use that as our guideline for determining the relative power balance between the SOs and the ACs as we try to model this community mechanism. So I don't support the proposal on the table that would allow GAC to have a decisional weight equivalent to the other SOs and ACs, and I think the at-large should be half the weight of the SOs that the SOs are given as based on today's board structure.
Thanks, Robin. I'm just going to ask people to hold the thought about the relative weights between them. Those are our next agenda items. But your point, Robin, about GAC inclusion is very clear, so thank you for that. The next speaker is Krista Spang.
Can you hear me, Jordan?
Sure can.
Jordan can. Good, excellent. I think we need to be careful about, I don't have a problem in principle with the GAC having the right in the future to choose to participate. But I think unless the GAC is prepared to commit to participate, creating a system of checks and balances and coming up with the right number of SOs and ACs that support is going to be complicated if you include the GAC and then discover that for the next 4 years that they don't actually participate in the process, because taking them outside of it, consistently having them outside of it is in effect having them outside. So I'm not against it. I just think we need to be very, very careful how we structure it. I must admit I had anticipated that we would treat them as an advisory committee until such time as they said they wanted to change. You seem to be suggesting that we should include them from the beginning, and I'm not sure how comfortable I am with that. It may not make any difference with the numbers at the end of the day, but on the other hand, it might. So I just want to raise a flag in case. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. Without getting into the detail, in this recommendation, I've tried to be as least change as possible compared with the second draft proposal, and that since that had them participating, I included them. In the second draft proposal, their non-participation would have had an effect in that it would have counted as no votes in making community decisions. At least in this system, it doesn't have that. We got a reasonable amount of flack, including from AUDA, actually, about the no certainty in regard to who would be making decisions or not. So I don't have an in-principle objection to some kind of triggering mechanism for future participation by an SO or an AC, but I think that that will complicate things immensely. So we should come back to that point in the CCWG, I think, depending on where we get to with the discussion here. Thank you for those points. Tijani, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, speaking. I do think that we have a consensus that all the SOs and ACs should be able to participate in the consensus if they want to do so. I will not respond to Robin now because it is 2C, and I will wait for 2C to respond to her. Thank you.
Thanks, Tijani. Yeah, thank you for sticking to the agenda there. Look, everyone, my hand is up in the speaking list just to offer a perspective on the substantive question rather than chairing it. To me, the accountability challenge for ICANN is keeping it accountable to the whole of the internet community. And so in making the call about who should be participating in decision-making, that is that's the thinking model that I've adopted. And to my mind, the the three SOs and the GAC and the ALAC are connections to significant communities of interest outside ICANN with various decisional roles or advisory roles across the group. I wouldn't have any particular trouble with all of the SOs and ACs participating in some way in a decisional way, but I think we have to respect their views when they don't want to. So that's why, personally, I'm happy to see ESSEC and ISAC advising rather than participating. But I'm comfortable with the set of five decisional groups, and I'm comfortable with the alignment of that not being the same as the ICANN board, because ICANN's primary purpose within its now technical mission is kind of well covered by the relative weights of power, by the multi-stakeholder model that it's developed to do its policy work and so on. But the holding to account is able to be a slightly broader thing. So that's why I'm personally comfortable with the recommendation. I should stress as rapporteur that I didn't write the recommendation because I'm comfortable with it. I wrote it because it was consistent with what I've been seeing in the discussion and because it was the least change from our second draft proposal. So it's just adding my perspective there. Thank you for indulging me. Caboose, you're next on the speaking list.
Jordan, I have difficulty to find where NTIA has mentioned implicitly or explicitly that it does not or is not in favor of GAC consensus advice. I have never heard that. They want that GAC remains as advisory capacity, and give the advice in a consensus manner. The only thing that for the time being they want consensus. On the other hand, it is not up to us. Somebody says they are consulting or discussing. No, it is not up to us to discuss who should participate, who should not participate. It is up to that community to decide whether permanently does not participate, like SAG or RSAG, or they may participate according to the case, or they may not participate. So I think it is not to any of us to propose that a given AC should be excluded. We are not representing NTIA, and we do not allow this sort of poisonous discussions. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. I only disagree with you to this extent. We have to have something in the rules that we write up that says who is participating and who isn't, or who can. So the essence of the proposed recommendation I've got is that we won't have SAC and RSAC on the list of who can, and that the other five can participate, and in each case it's up to them to decide whether to participate in a particular call or not. Thanks for taking the call. Jorge, you're next on the speaking list. Please go ahead.
Hello, Jordan.
I can hear you.
I would like to support what Caboose says. You can hear me? Okay.
Yep.
I would like to support what Caboose just said, and I have mentioned, I think, repeatedly, and I apologize for repeating it so much. We have a consensus input from the GAC from September 12th, which referred to the second public draft proposal. That proposal was based on voting, and that created some concerns within GAC members. However, even on the basis of that proposal with voting, the GAC said or stated in its input of September 12th, and this is the consensus input, or NTIA was part of it, the GAC stated that it would want to be provided five voting places within the community mechanism for the case if the GAC in the future would participate fully in that environment. So at the least, at that moment of time, this is almost 2 months ago, the GAC wanted at least an opt-in possibility. So I would be rather against, or I would rather I would rather suggest that we leave the possibility for the participate within the new escalation mechanism, including the last step. And we will have the third public comment period for the GAC to provide further input. So we will see within the GAC if the GAC really wants to participate at that last step or if it doesn't. And we will have clarity at that moment of time. So I would be really taking a decision to exclude the GAC from that possibility, taking into account the consensus input we have given in prior occasions, and that some allegations of some NTIA positions seem to be baseless or not based on what is the position of that agency, and in any case that the agency will be able to provide their own views by themselves if they want to. Thank you.
Thanks, Jorge, for that. Steve DelBianco, you're next in the speaking list.
One of the elements of clarity that we tried to come up with in Dublin was on column 4, which is in the table, of measuring whether there was consensus support to exercise the power. And we recognized that certain ACs and SOs would need to be very clear whether, by their own methods, they've come back to say, we support, we object, we merely wish to give advice, or we wish to remain silent. And that sort of multiple choice requires each AC and SO to check one of those four boxes, so that we would be abundantly clear that if the GAC, for instance, decided that it wanted to simply advise the community on whether to exercise this power but didn't want to object or support, we want the GAC to have an opportunity to make that abundantly clear, because it's very easy to misinterpret GAC advice using the diplomatic speech that you do to understand whether the GAC is saying the GAC opposes, the GAC supports, or the GAC is simply giving advice. So let's add that to whatever we do come up with in terms of flexibility about whether somebody like the GAC wanted to remain silent or take any of the other three options. I hope that clears it up a little bit for the GAC members on the call. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve. I just want to talk a little bit more about the discussion that's going on in the chat. In the second draft proposal, we provided a way for SOs and ACs to opt in and opt out of decision making. And one of the reasons that it was important to do that was because there was a voting system, and the thresholds that were expressed were percentages of a number of votes cast. I think it was 29 votes. And to preserve the simplicity of the decision system, the voting system, we simply specified the number of affirmative votes that you needed to reach to exercise a community power. And if you didn't hit that threshold, in other words, if you weren't voting for it, it didn't matter whether you were voting against it or not voting at all, your vote counted essentially as a no. And that's why we had to be very clear about whether people were, quote, participating or, quote, not participating, because it had an impact on those thresholds. If they chose not to participate, then their non-participation didn't count against the exercise of a community power. Now that we've moved away towards a kind of consensus-based process where non-participation doesn't stop the use of a power, the numbers in the decisional table that we're going to look at next were okay with 5 participating SOs and ACs. That's what they were kind of done implicitly to be okay with, and also okay for 7. That was reported to us by Steve DelBianco on the last call. So my recommendation, the recommendation on the agenda with those participating ones, is that those are the 5 SOs and ACs that are kind of recognized as participants with the right to make those decisions. They don't have to opt in or opt out permanently or on an enduring basis. They only have to decide in the case of each time they're asked to make a decision about whether they wish to participate or not. And there's pretty low thresholds to have a call to discuss exercising a community power, and there are pretty low thresholds to have a community forum to have the full discussion. And so by the end of that point is the only point where an SO or an AC needs to make a decision about whether to, you know, stand in support of the power being exercised or to register its opposition to it, in both cases by consensus. But I don't see, as a logical matter, what it is that we would add or detract from that system by having a formal opt-in or opt-out process. And on that basis, you could also include the ESSEC and the ISAC, but the ESSEC has specifically asked us not to be included. They've said they're not interested, they don't want to be. And so not inclusion in this, the only thing that that says is that if you wished to be included at a later point, there would be a bylaws change involved. And because this is the decisional mechanism, it would be a fundamental bylaws change. And so it would require approval by the existing decision makers as well as by the ICANN board. So, you know, that's kind of the... We haven't done modeling of that process because it hasn't been required to date. And so we adopted as a kind of goal for us simplicity as a doctrine, and that's a kind of elegant and simple way to do it. We could include the 7 SOs and ACs. We could include the 5 in my recommendation. Our numbers in our decision table that we look at next only become problematic if we just list 4, because that then requires unanimity to express some of the community powers, and we've said all along that unanimity is not a level of test that we were looking for. And those numbers probably endure if a new SO or an AC is incorporated as well. So that's the kind of context. I hope that just provides some increased clarity. And I'd ask if there are any kind of questions or comments that arise from that, because I'm not, you know, in terms of the interventions on the call and the discussion in the chat, it isn't entirely clear to me where people sit with the recommendation. So, you know, does anyone have any guidance on that point? Okay, is that a new hand from you, or is it an old hand from you? Old hand. Okay. We'll look at the decision-making table in a moment, but... Robin, I just want to query your point in the chat. I don't see how deciding which groups participate or otherwise empowers or disempowers the SOs. I think, isn't that the topic of the next discussion around the distribution of decision-making? Caboose, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
I have a question to some of those who always act against a particular community. Bylaws have several provisions that directly touches the interests of those communities. If we would not allow that community to participate in decision-making and just take their view as an advice, which is accepted or not, the other will change that part of bylaw which really touches the interests of those advisory committees. How they are not allowed to do that? I think it is a unilateral decision that somebody say, I decide for you, you advise, I am free to take your advice or not, but I can decide on your destiny. This is an inclusiveness of the multi-stakeholder, and why this, there is such a sort of motivation or orientation against a particular AC. I have heard that in many meetings, some specific individuals always stand up and raising their hand and expressing doubts and skepticism about a particular AC. What is the problem? What is the issue? There is sufficient difficulty. Instead of we working together to have this multi-stakeholder having a conversion, we create diversions. And this is polarization. It has a very negative reflection. We need to work more closely and to allow to the people to act properly. I don't think that GAC goes beyond what they expected to do. They remain advisory. They could provide an advice in favor of something with consensus, and I don't think that anything is wrong with that. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. Appreciate that. Okay. I don't really know how to call views on my recommendation. There's been a lot of discussion in the chat about it. There's been some. I think I'm detecting a bit of a need to be clear that there's no. These decisions aren't irrevocable. So if someone wishes to participate in future or new SLAC joins, I think we're clear that they need to be able to have the chance to participate in the community decision making. I don't feel like I've got a strong enough endorsement to validate the recommendation that I put up, which is that it's the five main SOs and ACs with SSAC and ISAC on the side. So my proposal to allow us to move on is to forward that recommendation to the group, to the CWG, and say that we didn't come to a conclusion on it. But it might also be an opportunity to try out our right hands or left hands and use our green ticks and red crosses. Just to see where people's heads are at. It may be that most people haven't spoken in the debate, and there is a little bit of a lack of clarity on my part as someone who's reading the chat and absorbing the verbal discussion. So I'd like you to get ready to do a little temperature check on this, and we'll just see where it goes. If there's a very strong favorability towards the recommendation, we can say that. But the recommendation is that the five decisional groups, so GNSO, CCNSO, ASO, ALAC, and GAC, and so that's exactly the same as in the agenda under item 2B. So I'm not changing that. In fact, if I was a quicker person, I could probably paste that into the chat. And in fact, I can. So the thing that I'm going to ask you in a moment to do a tick and cross with is on the question that I've just, the recommendation that I've just pasted in. So please fire up your green ticks if you're in favor of that recommendation, and please fire up your red crosses if you're against that recommendation. And then we'll just run that for a couple of minutes. And we'll see where we land on it. You can exercise your green tick or your red cross on the button that you'd usually use to put up your hand. There's a little arrow on the right-hand side of that, and you can use the green tick to agree. You can use the red cross to disagree. And at the moment, we've got 12 people participating out of 30 on the call. So we'll keep that going a little bit longer, give you all a chance to participate on that. And so I'll just include that, that information with the recommendation. But based on the verbal discussion, I don't want to say that it's a... work party one recommendation per se. So my count of that at the moment is that there are 10 green ticks and there are 4 red crosses on that question. I think we've had 11. 11 green ticks and 4 red crosses. So thank you. 12 green ticks. We'll just keep that going. So I just respond to Matthew's comment in the chat. It doesn't contradict the ability of our second effect to change their minds. It would, to be clear, contradict their ability to change their minds without a bylaws change. Thomas also supports that. So that was, there were 12 green ticks and there's a 13th off the side. So there were 13 affirmations for against. If you could clear your green ticks and crosses, we'll include that in the thing. But again, as I said, I'll note that it isn't in the discussion. There was not as much of a clarity as there was around the first recommendation. Thank you, everyone. And we will carry on with the meeting, which is agenda item C, which is the distribution of the decision-making weights between those five. If we're doing a consensus approach, as we've been talking about in this call, it's difficult to apply weights, if you like, to any group. And the inherent logic of the five S's and A's that there seems to be some support behind and of a consensus call is that when you're assessing consensus, you're just assessing the expressed views of the people participating or the organizations participating. So I'll take a speaking list on that particular question. The recommendation from me to the group is that each of the five SOs and ACs with decision rights have an equality of voice or influence in decisions to exercise the community powers. And I'll just paste that recommendation into the chat so people can see it. I'll share them out with the other one. And ask for a speaking list on that question. And the first person with the hand up is Tijani. So please, Tijani, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Jordan. I will reply now to the comment of Robin. She repeatedly said that we should stick to the distribution of the power inside the board, actually, means the status quo. I want to remind her and Alan Greenberg sent an email today to explain that very clearly, that the power inside the board is not for the SOs and half ALAC only. Because half of the board is not selected by SOs or ALAC. So please don't repeat this argument because it is not relevant. The power, if you want, the decision-making inside ICANN today is not given to the SOs plus half ALAC only. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. Making sure I'm not on mute. I'm not on mute. That's good. I see a dearth of hands. I see no frantic waving of hands in the air on this question. So to provoke any hands, I'm going to say that we do agree with this recommendation unless there's an outpouring of grief. And the logic for that is simply that it's mostly consistent with what we've said before or the previous kind of calls that we've made in this call. That works. Yay. Robin, please go ahead.
Hi, it's Robin. Can you hear me okay?
Sure can.
Okay. So, you know, I just want to be on the record once again, and I won't repeat what I've said before, but I think all these issues are related and create treating all the SOs and the ACs as if they were equal is a mistake, and it significantly disempowers the SOs, which currently have a much larger share of the ICANN board of directors in terms of appointments. And this is a power shift away from the SOs and towards the ACs at ICANN. And so I just want to remind people that that's what we're doing here. And, you know, we need to be doing this knowingly. Simply labeling something as consensus does not change the fact that we're counting noses at the end of the day. And the count has significantly shifted in favor of the ACs by doing that. And I think there's a significant danger in providing the GAC in particular with decisional power on these decisions at ICANN. So I think that the changes, the proposals that were coming out of today's meeting will cause significant concern, particularly from my community in the NCSG and probably also the GNSO, that would cause dissenting opinions on the overall proposal. So I think it's worth pointing out that this power shift is what we're doing, and we can't pretend that it isn't, and there will be dissenting opinions on it. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. I would just note for the record, in addition to your comment, that the power shift that's being proposed here is the same as the power shift that was proposed in the second draft proposal. And while there were comments in the public comments that supported a more SO-centric decision, indeed my own organization submitted along those lines, it wasn't what I would call, so I'm not speaking for you, I'm speaking for myself. My analysis of those comments was not that it was an overwhelming drumbeat of opposition to the model that was proposed. Maybe we should exercise our green ticks again, because there isn't a huge number of calls here. I've pasted the recommendation. I'll paste it in again. I can't. I've lost it. And can we consider using our green ticks and crosses on this? This is about equality within the SOs and ACs who are making decisions. If you're in favor of that recommendation, could you please roll out your green agree tick? If you are against it, could you please roll out your red disagree tick? And staff, just a heads up that the next item we'll need to display in the screen is the decisional table that was in the paper that we circulated in the agenda for this meeting. So on this current question, I see four red crosses and 13 green ticks. And that's what we've got at the minute. So that's, thank you for that information. And let's clear our hands and move on with the agenda. We've been taking, I think, the pace of this call just about right. I would say that since I'm helping with running the pace of it. But we do only have 40 minutes left. We don't have Jonathan Zuck on the call, so we won't be doing that budget power item. I think we're about on time, so just highlighting the check on time. So the next agenda item is decision thresholds. And if you've got scroll control on the document in front of you, you could scroll down to the second page of that. It's got the voting thresholds that are there. And we've looked at those numbers, and we haven't had any. The significant debate in this issue has been in the past about the splitting, and I'm sure that'll still be a debate at the CCWG. But there hasn't been a lot of discussion around the overall threshold required to exercise decision making here. And so if you look down that fourth column of it, the SOs and ACs, expressing support or objections, the exercise of a power, those are the material numbers that we're talking about in this agenda item. It's the decision thresholds. And we need to decide whether those thresholds are okay or need adjustment. This is kind of like a final call on that question. And on the last call, there were no proposals to adjust those thresholds. Given that this is a chance for any of the preceding discussion to have any impact on this. This is item 2D in the agenda for those who are just joining, and the recommendation I'm just pasting into the chat. And it is that we agree with these levels of power. So I'll take any speakers on that question around these thresholds. Are there any comments here? And Chris has asked a question in the chat around the status of the right-hand column. What the right-hand column does is just take the numbers in the column beside it and multiply them by 5. So we're making a recommendation that that not be the case. That column stands as an example of what it would be like if there was one. Matthew asks, how did I update the paper? And so I took what Steve had done, and I very slightly changed the language in the fourth column to support an objection instead of support or an object. And I was trying to indicate the consensus point that Caboose had made, not entirely fairly. But that's the only thing I changed. Are there any speakers on this table? If not, because we've discussed it previously, and because there seems to have been a degree of comfort with it, I'm going to assert that the recommendation is agreed by the Work Party 1. Tijani, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Jordan. Do you hear me? Okay. I think that this threshold proposed here are independent of the number of SO and AC participating in this consensus.
That is
my understanding.
That's my understanding as well, Tijani, yes.
Okay, very good. So the last column, if we have a consensus on the non-speak of the position of the SO and AC, the last column will disappear, I hope.
Yes, if the decisional approach doesn't include splits along those lines, then that last column wouldn't be there.
Thank you very much.
Just a little recap on this table. I think, and Steve, I might just ask you to re-explain that, since we may have a different group or people may not have perfect recall of what happened on the last call. What I asked you last time about how many were contemplated with these numbers, you said that it was, we were aware that 7 SOs and ACs might be participating, but also the more central assumption was that 5 would be. So is that still your view?
That's right, Jordan. That's right. We did these on the basis of having at most 5 participants.
Thanks, Steve. And I'll note another design criterion of all of the community powers has been that it should not be possible for one SO or AC to block the exercise of any of the powers. And so the thresholds have been developed with that in mind.
Jordan, and that was delineated on page 1, because the terms of reference is on page 1, that we used to develop the small breakout included that no one group would veto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I note for the records, board members in the chat arguing that one objection on the dismissal of the board should be able to stall the use of that power, but that's already been dealt with in the past by the CCWG. Are there any other speakers on this question? My advice for those who we've highlighted with the asterisk, the bevel asterisk that's been mentioned in the chat, the fact that some people would like one objection to block consensus in respect of recalling the entire board. And so the recommendation here is to forward this table, which includes that objection. And so I think that will spark the discussion that needs to be had in the full CCWG to consider the issue that's being made. And on that basis, the fact that it doesn't close that item off, I'm going to call that recommendation agreed, and we will move on to the next agenda item. Thank you, everyone, for that. That's been an hour and a half of useful and constructive discussion and deliberation. Item three comes from just a point that I noted, and so let me introduce it. When we, the group, small group on decision-making in the Dublin meeting came up with the nifty little staircase of interventions, and one of them is this noting of a resolution and dialogue step in the escalation path. Chris is asking a question. When will this go to the CCWG? Chris, my understanding is that it's on the agenda for the CCWG call that happens in about 11 and a half hours from now. But I don't have the agenda in front of me. I do have the agenda in front of me. Decision-making is item three. Thomas Rickert, if you're on the call, could you clarify whether the CCWG as a whole is planning to make decisions on this decision-making stuff at its next call, or is it going to have an initial discussion?
Yeah, this is Thomas Rickert. For the record, we do have a plan to discuss it tomorrow and also to come to a decision tomorrow, because we need to move on with that, close it, so that the report can be drafted accordingly.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that clarification. So to come back to the point, the resolution dialogue step has been inserted after the decisions of the community and exercising the community powers. And I just wanted to raise a kind of concern with that in respect to some of the powers. For the bylaws ones, when either approving a change to the fundamental bylaws or rejecting one, it seems to me that a resolution dialogue step is kind of not relevant. The purpose is to go back to the promulgate a revised. In other words, it isn't relevant to the community decision making on the power, because if the rejection is made, it isn't as if ICANN is going to say we reject that decision and we're going to push through the bylaws change anyway. ICANN's approach, if the bylaw change is rejected, would be to go and consult further or to discuss what the issue is that has caused the problem. So it's really unlikely that a resolution dialogue step at that point in that linear fashion that's leading then to enforcement is actually going to be relevant. My question for the other ones was, who is the resolution or dialogue happening between? Now, Steve is saying in the chat that it's only relevant to the IRP process. So if the community was going to take a community IRP to enforce a power, that's where it would be relevant. Steve, do you want to just expand on that point?
Yeah, the dialogue point was pulled together when Jonathan Zook was presenting, and it was only noticed to the effect of the IRP, because the IRP is a power that once we have decided to exercise it, we at that point try to round up the panel of experts and begin a many-month process that causes the spending of significant dollars on impaneling the IRP and awaiting a ruling. And it's that one where the community, having reached the decision to file an IRP, it's appropriate for that point the board to have a really serious dialogue, because it looks like we're now going to be starting a many-month and potentially very expensive process. On the other powers, it's more like the way you just explained, Jordan. The board had been participating, and in fact, the legal team is participating at every step in the escalation. So there are no surprises, and when you reach the end, despite the board's best counterarguments, we may still elect to block a bylaws change. We may still elect to block a budget. There isn't any need for dialogue, since at that point the board has been part of the dialogue all along. The IRP is special because it turns things over to a third party, a panel. And before taking that risk, it's just like the constructive engagement process we use today at the beginning of an IRP. The idea is to create an opportunity before we turn it over to the panel to see if we can't work this out with the board, and the board find a way to satisfy the community's concern. So it really only applies to IRP, and I didn't mean to imply that it applied to them all. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Steve. That is an important clarification that had passed me by, and it may have passed others by. I feel a little bit silly that it did pass me by, but thank you for explaining that to us. And I think that probably disposes of that agenda item with some clarity. And so we need to make sure that the graphical representations of this that explain do for us is clear on that point for all of the other community powers. Okay, that's item three in our agenda. We are Jonathan Zuklis, who's finishing his honeymoon and heading to the IGF in João Pessoa. So we can't have an update for him on the budget power. But I'm hoping that item five here with the ICANN staff updates about what work Party One needs to do can include a brief mention of where that's up to. Staff, I don't know who's going to lead that. And actually, since we've got a co-chair on the call as well, I don't know if Thomas might want to chip in something as well, either first or second. I wasn't able to attend the prep call for the CCWG, so I don't know if someone has been sort of tasked with giving this item. So staff or Thomas, whoever is appropriate, over to you.
Jordan, would you be as kind as to reframe the question for me, please, because I was distracted for a second.
So we're on to item five in the agenda, which is an update from ICANN staff about what Party One needs to do next. And the reason for that is that we've got around about 15 or 14 days until we need to finalize our report. And I just wanted to give staff or co-chairs the opportunity to give Work Party One participants a sense of what work needs to be done in the next 2 weeks by this work party. I think we've done a good job in dealing with the decisional question that was in front of us, but I was hoping to get a sense of the timelines on what's coming next, or to be told that we'll get that information in that briefing at the CCWG, and so we don't need to worry about it now, given the CCWG call is about 10 hours away.
Yes, it's a little bit difficult for me to follow because I'm not in the AC where all this is in writing. First of all, let me say that I think you're making excellent progress. So again, kudos to you and your team for advancing the topics that we still have on our plate. I would suggest that we await the outcome of tomorrow's call. Hopefully, we will get closure on the most challenging questions tomorrow, and I would assume that should there be the need that we will have additional to-dos for the sub-team. You can also expect that we will elaborate on the next steps, report drafting, associated topics during tomorrow's call. So I think we should await that, in fact, for you to get further instructions, if any.
Okay. Thanks, Thomas. I'm perfectly happy for us to have that discussion there. Staff, is there anything that you want to add at this point, or shall we wait and see what comes out of the CCWG call? B is Bernie at this point. As one of the staff, he's saying all good here, so that is indeed a good thing. I just want to refer back in the chat to the issue of thresholds and unanimity, etc. These issues have been widely canvassed and discussed in the CCWG in both the first and second draft proposals and the months of debate leading up to them. So we're not coming at these issues fresh, and it will take, I think, some new information to really shift the group's analysis. That is something that should be raised, as both George and Keith have identified in the CCWG call that's coming up in 10 hours or so. So we're on to the last agenda item, which is any other business. Are there any other business items to raise in the call? If there are, pop them in the chat or raise your hand. In the meantime, I'll keep chatting at you to say that my understanding of the work plan, as we've all discussed on the CCWG calls, is that there are professional writers in action, that we will be getting bits of draft text to look at in various pieces over the next couple of weeks, that rather than redlining them, our job as a work party will be to focus on our areas to identify any parts where the text doesn't actually match our requirements, and to give feedback about what we need the text to say back to the professional writers so that it can be corrected and improved. We will not be having group-based redlining exercises because that will make the editing process next to impossible. Kavus, your hand is up. Any other business item? Please go ahead.
Asking about the tomorrow, is it 6 UTC, the tomorrow CCWG?
Yes, the call number 65 is on Tuesday, the 3rd of November, from 0600 hours to 0800 hours UTC.
That means 6 o'clock in the morning of UTC, right?
Yes. That's right.
Okay, thank you. Thanks.
No problem. Happy to help with your diary. Are there any other AOB items? Because if not, I am delighted to say that we can finish this call a bit early, and to thank you all very much for your participation in the discussion and decision-making that we've done. I will write an email in the next hour or so to flick through those recommendations from this group to the whole CCWG. I'll send it directly to the CCWG list, and then I'll forward it for the record to the WP1 list. Thanks all very much, and undoubtedly I'll speak with some of you in around about 10 hours or so on the next call. I hope you have a lovely morning, afternoon, evening. Sleep if you're going to get it between now and then. Have a good day.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jordan. Sterling job, as always. Thank you.